Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So today, there was a new moon at 16 plus Gemini, and on June 8th, 1967, there was a new moon at 16 Gemini. That was exactly resonance, right? Again, voices are resonant. That was when Israel attacked the intelligence ship, the USS Liberty. The story was hushed up, but now we want to spread it widely for Bibi's visit to D.C. next week. So welcoming many voices here to help me welcome the many voices useful for us all now is the return of Eddie Nix, who plays a bookseller in real life and has many projects operating in the dream world. He is founder and operator of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua, an incredible bookstore mecca, incredible, and was a founding teacher at Youth Initiative High School, has a radio show on community radio station WDRT every Sunday. He identifies as a rhizome, we're going to get to that, or a verb, depending on circumstances, and he's been many other things also. That we are here to bring in the myriad voices for democracy and Elegba, the guardian of the crossroads, to open the path for truth and for Leonard Peltier to emerge free on June 10th. Many things before us. Welcome, Eddie.
Well, thank you, Caroline. It's an absolute pleasure to speak with you and your gentle listeners once again.
That's so great. Well, let's begin with this astounding story that I don't think I knew. You know, the remarkable resonance between the new moon of 16 Gemini now and the new moon of 16 Gemini Thursday, June 8th, 1967. The image for both is head of a youth changes into that of a mature thinker, transparent intelligence. We go, maybe now. So let's waft this story all the way out there. In time for Bibi's visit to D.C. next week, yeah. So we're going to begin with our Al Jazeera short clip, and the full episode will be listed at Visionary Activist Patreon and also the, you know, on all of our postings on KPFA and all. So here we go. It's the Al Jazeera clip that begins the story on the USS Liberty.
It was the 8th of June, 67, in the middle of the Six-Day War.
Early June, 1967. The Six-Day War in the Middle East between Israel, Egypt, Jordan, and Syria is underway. A spy ship, very lightly armed, but bristling with antennae, steams into the Mediterranean to eavesdrop on the conflict. It is patrolling in international waters off the Egyptian coast. At 2 p.m, on June the 8th, with the war reaching its climax, Israeli jets and motor torpedo boats launch an unprovoked attack on the ship. They drop napalm and strafe its decks with rockets, cannon fire, and armor-piercing rounds before trying to sink it with torpedoes.
We had no way to defend ourselves, and it was just, we were just slaughtered.
And they shot up life rafts that were put into the water, and they shot the ones that were still on board the ship.
Bullet holes, shell holes, everywhere, blood. The forecastle, the front part of the ship, was just red with blood.
Throughout the attack, the ship flies the Stars and Stripes, the flag of Israel's closest ally, the United States of America. Its name, the USS Liberty, is freshly painted on its stern, and the bow carries the distinctive numbers of an American naval vessel.
Out of a crew of just under 300, there were 34 killed and 172 injured in varying degrees to life-threatening, life-debilitating injuries. So that was more than two-thirds of the crew.
Whoa. So if you watch the whole thing, and we have more to say about it, LBJ at the time, all right, we're humming 1967, we're humming 1967, so much going on then, pertinent to us now, exact new moon humming. So LBJ hears about this and is outraged and secretly leaks the true story to Newsweek. Somebody leaks to the Israeli government that LBJ has leaked this, and the Israeli government leans into LBJ and says, if you do this, if you don't cover up this incident, then we will sink your political career. We will accuse you of blood libel and anti-Semitism. They have LBJ. They have him by the balls, right? And so so he suppresses the whole story, and Israel says, well, we have some presents for you in return. Much of the Jewish progressive left is anti-Vietnam. We will quiet them down as a gift to you. My own late brother-in-law was an important government person. He appears at minute 30 in this show. And his colleagues wish that he had been bolder, more confident, and vocal, expressing his point of view in such serious circumstances when they happened, rather than complicit in the cover-up. And so we go, well, Gemini, let the dead speak now. Let them make up for what they didn't do. Let's put this story out there. Israel, of course, said at the time, the incident is under review. They just said that the other day, right? It's like Chatty Cathy, you pull a string and it's like the incident is under review. And then, Eddie, you found this great song that we're going to play also, which is pretty rich in narrative. Who is this and where did you find it? And what's the story of the ballad of the USS Liberty?
Yes. So one of my favorite singer-songwriters and sort of one of the last, protest troubadours on the scene, Mr. David Rovix, who I just remember through all the years of the 90s and the 2000s, whenever there'd be a big protest in D.C. or San Francisco or anywhere about anything, he would make his way there and write songs and sing to the people and have that active role. And now he, is a father and he's a husband and he's doing his life, but he's still writing these songs. So, as this Gaza thing has happened, he put out a new record of very, very hard-hitting, relevant songs. On a weekly basis, there's some take on some thing that, hey, we got bamboozled on this. Let's take another look. So this song is a remix of one of his older songs about the USS Liberty that he sort of remade in the last few weeks.
That's great. Okay, let's hear the Ballad of the USS Liberty by David Rovick. Here we go.
It was the 8th of June, 67, in the middle of the Six-Day War. The international waters off the sands of the Mediterranean shore. They were executing prisoners by a mosque in the Sinai. And that day scores of Egyptian soldiers' bodies there would lie. The IDF was trying to cover up their war crimes. And the USS Liberty saw it all in real time. So the Israeli Air Force got orders, bombs away, when Israel attacked the USA. The pilot saw the American flag as he came down from the sky. He asked for confirmation and was told to let him fly. They dropped 1,000-pound bombs, and then what they do is drop napalm to burn down the ship along with the crew. After all that, the ship's still afloat. Came the IDF's torpedo boats. All the survivors remember the day when Israel attacked the USA. When sailors lowered escape rafts down to the water, they were met with an aerial slaughter as the IDF attacked all those trying to flee from the fires raging throughout the Liberty. A Soviet ship
offered to assist, as eventually the Israeli bombers would desist. Somehow the ship managed to limp into the bay when Israel attacked the USA. Sides of the ocean. President Johnson didn't want any unnecessary commotion. Just forget it ever happened. Squash the investigation. No Israelis were punished for committing any violation. They said it was an accident, a thin disguise. Everyone who witnessed believes this is a lie. It was entirely intentional. That's what they say when Israel attacked the USA. Bombed or shot, hundreds more maimed on the spot. But the big thing about which the brass was concerned were the NSA documents they wanted burned, so they could classify everything top secret. Tell all the survivors, don't talk about it. But finally the truth has seen the light of day when Israel attacked the USA. June 1967, in the middle of the Six-Day War.
Ooh, oh, ooh. That's so smoking. That's so great, Eddie. Thank you for finding that and turning us on to David Rovick, a great Gemini bard, like Bob Dylan. But this is even smokier right now, and so narratively. Yeah, because again, when we see the full Al Jazeera report, which was done 9 years ago, the captain said, you know, this was a great ship. We had, you know, it was wonderful. We were gathering intelligence, you know, and everybody was just sunbathing, you know, at 2 p.m. when the bombs and the napalm and the rockets and the torpedoes, and then in the lifeboats, Israel machine gunned the people. And then all of the survivors were ordered to never speak of it, right? Those who, you know, whose loved ones had died, and those who were grievously injured, like, you can't talk about it. And it's like, I like seeing, you know, let's, in the dream world, everybody, let's have every reporter ask Bibi about this. Because it's super important. And in the report, it says, you know, part of Israel's hold on LBJ is that they say Israel controlled over 150 electoral votes of the 270 needed to be elected. Back in 1967, team, this is really important. And what the USS Liberty, right, says is that Israel was wanting to keep its war secret going. It's just a little thing. It's just a little thing. While they're grabbing the Golan Heights and, you know, executing prisoners and grabbing parts of the West Bank and, you know, all of that. So it's like, whew. So here we are. It's rhyming. And, you know, it is, I mean, did you know about this because you know about so much. David Rovick knew about this. But I don't know if I knew about this. I don't know if I'd ever heard this crucial story before. Is it known to you and your colleagues, Eddie Nix?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've known about this for a long time, and it's almost been one of those, you know, verboten topics to bring up. And I think you hit the nail on the head where the anti-Semitism moniker is being, you know, weaponized right now. And it has been forever in relation to this incident. I think if you brought it up, it was one of those, ooh, be careful or we'll cancel you kind of moments. And it brings up, I think a couple of years ago, one of our former heroes of Wisconsin, Brett Favre, the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, was pranked. And I love the Yes Men and all these sort of great pranksters that are running around. And this was a group that was, you know, I don't know who they were, but they got him to, like, you know, he was a guy who was like, yeah, for $500, I'll make a video and say anything you want me to. So they pranked him and said, talk about the USS Liberty. And they gave him the script and, you know, and he was immediately labeled an anti-Semite and immediately, you know, canceled, and he had to, you know, apologize, and it was a nightmare. But it just shows the potency of bringing up this sort of incident that's erased conveniently from history.
Right. And it's so humming. That's why I kind of recombobulated the show today, going, oh, never mind that. We've got to do this. And with Eddie, just that it's so precise. The new moon at 16 Gemini on June 8th, 1967, and the new moon at 16 Gemini today, going, telepathy through the airwaves. So may it go forward. And from Sean at our council, where we were delighted to have you as guest on Monday, and he had a line, I can't remember where it's from, Yakayo, which is as a headline, which meaning he has already fallen. Bibi has already fallen. You know, I don't know if you, that's useful. Gemini, our words, our incantations. Yakayo. Yes. It's kind of like the Qigong way of understanding language, which is it has already happened. It has already happened, right? And just to chant that. And then just for all of us, you know, the Gemini is like, how do we not get distracted? And I love from Terry Pratchett's last novel, the Queen of the Fairies, who's become a good person, right? And she's teaching the witches how to dissolve the tyranny of glamour. And the witches say, oh, no, we're witches. We're not seducible at all. You know, we're whatever it is. And the Queen of the Fairies goes, well, let me just show you, and goes a little, and each one of the witches goes, ah, but I, yes, if I, it's sort of like Galadriel, if I had the Ring of Power, then I would, oh, but actually I'm a fraud, I'm nobody, and they sink into kind of withering, smoldering ashes, and then they go, ooh, that was strong. And so she teaches them the mantra, which we can all use, yan tan tethera, to sweep away the fog of delusion, yan tan tethera, just to see, you know, at press conferences, you know, like, because wasn't there a wonderful thing in the Illuminatus trilogy that by Robert Anton Wilson, and let's bring him in too, that there was a word that we were designed to not hear, but when it was said, it would cause us to go into passivity, and the word was Fnord, right? And so the news would open going, good evening, Fnord. And anyway, I don't know if you remember that, but it's a good metaphor.
Yeah, it's one of those secret handshake things with lovers of Bob's work. You know, I have a sticker in the bookstore that says Fnord, but it's in the symbol of the Ford symbol, right? And I think, of course, that was a take on Ford and Fordism from Huxley. You know, Brave New World. You know, Ford being this sort of Elon Musk of his day, or, you know, super leader that we all must, you know, worship because of his great techno brilliance. It brings up the other great departed Wilson brother, Peter Lamborn Wilson, Hakeem Bey, who coined this beautiful term, technopathocracy. And this is what we suffer under. It's the rule of the sick machines, right? And the gaze of the screen that we're all fighting, and this brings up what you said about Gemini, the good and the bad, the shadow and the light. When we think of Hermes, who's this, you know, master of communication, but also the master of failure of communication, and this Liberty incident being an example of the Hermetic, in that it was a communication ship, it was stealing the signals from the ether, it was, you know, and what happened? It got disappeared. And this idea of sick machines, sort of the algorithm of our culture, has been so badly crafted, I guess, that we need to maybe think about, you know, instead of creating better algorithms for AI, which is sort of our new captor, create better algorithms for our culture. You know, our culture says, you know, what are the crazy, insane things our culture says? Like, hey, war is good if it profits, and collateral damage is okay if you know, we're doing the right thing, and just wars are okay. But the idea that we have, you know, Israel has this AI bombing system, which I can't remember the name of it, but it's some crazy, ironic biblical name, you know, that basically, you know, they don't want guys to have to make those decisions anymore. So they let the computer do it, and it clicks down all their data, all their surveillance data and their intelligence data. And it says, hey, this UN run school is a probable target and pretty high probability that there might be some bad guys in there. And look what happened yesterday. We bomb a UN school and kill, you know, another 50 women and children.
Who had already moved from Gaza to Khan Yunus to whatever, to Rafah, to the school, right? And again, what Israel said in 1967, the incident is under review. They said it yesterday. The incident's under review, right? It's just a standard, you know, again, pull a string and say it. So, yes, and, you know, George Carlin, we invoke him too. He just says, when you're distracted, you can't see the game or play in it. You know, you think you have choices, right? But really, all you have is 23 flavors of bagels. Otherwise, there's only two of everything, right? Anyway, so, yeah, so we're here to gather our wits. And, yeah, what you bring up is crucial. Like, let's remember all the parts of our lives where we were, you know, appropriately, you know, creatively suspicious. And, you know, really, when I think of my own journey, you know, I think in eighth grade, I wrote a report on subliminal seduction, right? Again, how we are manipulated through ads with symbols embedded in the ice and stuff like that, going, yeah, no, all of that's important. Like, because this is kind of crucial. You know, so many people are snookered by their desire to not be snookered, right? And it's like, no, okay, yantan tethera, right? We want to be unbamboozleable, yantan tethera, right? And not hoodwinked into another cult by our desire to show that we know what's what. Anyway, so all those things there. And that includes, you know, what's rampant in Facebook, and some people are really checking with Snopes and stuff, because there's an Einstein quote going around, but his real quote is much more radical, an ally put the real quote down. So Einstein wrote an essay called Why Socialism, published in 1949, in which he said, moreover, under existing conditions, private capitalists inevitably control directly or indirectly the main sources of information, press, radio, education. It's thus extremely difficult, and indeed in most cases quite impossible, for the individual citizen to come to objective conclusions and to make intelligent use of his political rights. Thank you. Thank you, Einstein. There we go.
Yes, and I think bamboozle is the best word to think about this narrative manipulation that we're all going through. And it goes back to, you know, another person to invoke, Giordano Bruno, you know, one of the great radical thinkers, you know, who is literally burned at the stake for, you know, questioning whether the, you know, the earth really goes around the sun, or the sun really goes around the earth. And you know, he knew back then that manipulation was possible through images. You know what I mean? If you read like Jano Culiano's work, or even Francis Yates' work, you know, on Bruno, he understood the manipulation of the masses through the image. I think there was a quote where he said, it's way easier to manipulate everyone with an image than to make someone fall in love with you, right? And it's so hard in this techno-pathocracy, you know, the gaze of the screen, where I think that's the fight we're going, because it's not going to be a techno-utopia. You know, I think we realized that back in the late 90s. Our dreams of this technology, this Hermes stuff manifesting in utopia is not going to happen. It's moving more towards the, you know, the social credit score, as we say in China. You know, every little move is some sort of debit or credit on our ability to do everything else. And if we really want that, then we're on our way. But, you know, I think there's more people questioning that narrative right now. And I think that the desperateness of the reaction to that, whether it's anti-Semitism or whatever, is indicative of the dangerous times we seem to be living in.
No, that's so great. That's so great. And I'm so grateful. I'm just drawing in the sextile between Jupiter and Neptune. I'm so grateful that you brought up Giordano Bruno and Francis Yates, because I'd had that book for years, and I read it a million years ago, and then recently came up again, and I'm like, where's my copy? Where's my copy? So I ordered another one. There's a word for something that you can't find, and then you order another one, and then when it arrives, you find the original one. But anyway, I just got the improved, not as beautiful a cover, but the improved Francis Yates, Giordano Bruno, going, yes, our allies, right? Science and Hermeticism. Because a lot of people go, oh, our first martyr for science. And we go, yes, science and Hermeticism. I mean, he was a magi. I mean, he was a science. It's part of our assignment now, the Gemini-Pisces conversation, to give vernacular expression to deep, powerful metaphysics. And as he knew, you know, and as we're saying too, you know, and then we deal with the modern, you know, Steve Bannon. We have a little ode to him later in the show because he's going to prison on July 1st, only for 4 months, but it's a good start. Maybe he can bunk with Trump. He is a powerful, I mean, he's read as many, as Steve Bannon has read as many esoteric books as I have, but he's really a black magician, but fully aware of the manipulative power of symbols. And once again, it's like symbols. Who's got the symbols? Yeah. So so Francis Yates, and the gaze of the screen, right? And how do we break our trance? And
well, back to the idea, you know, the idea of the panopticon. Some psychologists used this and designed a prison where it was circular and that the guard tower was in the middle, so you were always being watched potentially. And Peter Wilson comes up and has another great term called, where he says the blind panopticon of capital, you know. And it seems like the more we give into the social media or the screen in whatever sense, the further distracted we are from the art of our lives and the lives of our art, you know, how it should be, you know, the art, you know, we're obsessed with things, you know, what art did you produce? Where's the thing? Where's the artifact? But art has to be a way of life. Yeah. I mean, a state of mind, you know, true art, I think, embodies that. And, you know, it's interesting to see what the resistance to the techno society is these days. Around here, it's vibrant, you know, with the homesteaders and the back to the landers, this sort of next wave of people trying to do regenerative agriculture and, you know, almost adopt those neo-Amish ways, you know, like take the best things from these folks. They're all around us, you know. They got the best plants. They got the best maple syrup, you know, they can make the best house for cheapest. Well, what are they doing that we can't do? You know, have you ever seen a bunch of, you know, normal American people put up a barn in a few days? I mean, I'm sure it happens, but these guys do it on a monthly basis.
Yeah, no, and then there's the story that's been sort of everywhere in a surface way about Elon Musk brought Starlink and internet to a previously uncontacted tribe in the Brazilian Amazon, right? And at first they were welcomed it, right? But now they go, oh, everything's liberating and imprisoning, and now they say they're all addicted to porn, and all the kids no longer want to make crafts. They're all just right on their phones like us. And it's like, oh, Lord, right there we go. This thing. Yeah, power of symbols. So we're going to take a short break in a moment with our short music of Legba. Legba is the guardian of the crossroads who opens the path. We want to open the path for truth. We want to open the path for Leonard Peltier being freed on Monday, June 10th. Again, necessary miracles. That's why we call in Legba. Our guest this hour is Eddie Nix, and we are here with Legba again to open the path for necessary miracles. Mm-hmm. And we'll be right back after here's Legba.
Para su ayo.
So Louisa Tisch first taught me that song, and then my longtime collaborator, Amakayla Gaston, does that as well. And it's perfect for us now, Eddie Nix, because Legba, that chant, is the image that we can all hold is that our minds are scattered through the universe, scattered through the universe. Whoa. And that chant calls all of the diaspora of our minds from the far reaches of distraction into our coherent now. Right. And that's part of, you know, we do want to see Leonard Peltier, his parole hearing, possibly his last, because he's 79, on June 10th on Monday. Right. And Leonard is really guiding us as to how we can participate in his freedom. Amnesty International has petitions. We'll be posting those also at the Patreon Visionary Activist Show and everywhere, you know. On that day, Jupiter, in Gemini, Legba's sign, its image is holly and mistletoe, druidic life force. And we go, right, trines Leonard's Neptune, his dream. And the image for Leonard's Neptune is relations gathering around a storytelling fire. So really, he invites all of us to do every action we can, and letters, again, to be remembered, and to see this, again, against all odds, to see Leonard Peltier emerging into the caress of sun and wind and all the relations who love him. So Legba opens portals for necessary miracles. And I want to just also invoke, you know, Brittany Griner, wonderful, wonderful human, born with the new moon, Libra, 25 Libra, which is about shape-shifting and strategy and justice. And she's an ardent prison reformer, having experienced Russian prison, and against all odds was released. So, and then also I think just, calling in, the ancestors, John Trudell, Vine Deloria, and the fabulous ending of the movie Thunderheart, which is kind of loosely based on the story, but the fabulous ending of Thunderheart is where, again, the forces of government and evil up to no good are trapping the remaining heroes, but they go back into a canyon and all of the ancestors show up, in tangible form and protect us. Anyway, so I think for us to see that is good. To work with Leonard. Saturn will be stationing at 19 degrees of Pisces, exactly opposite his sun, and we go, right, it's a deep appointment. We get that. It's a powerful, deep appointment. But, focus and expand. I mean, for all of us, our dedication, inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity in every micro and macro way. So there's that. All voices. And, Venus, it's the start of a whole Venus cycle. Venus in the underworld, right, exactly conjoined the sun yesterday, or what's called Kazemi. It's a fun astro title, exactly the same degree. And when Venus was in the underworld, just a day or two, her image with the sun was woman gives rousing speech on behalf of the earth. And it's the woman in all of us, regardless of gender, you know, going, woo. And this is the whole new Venus cycle. She forms a pentagram, a five-pointed star over 8 years. And so this new moon is her point going, Venus, art has her voice. And to honor that, we have a great clip of Amrit Kaur accepting her award in Canada for the movie Queen of My Dreams. So here's Amrit Kaur.
It's like a weightlifting class. I really should have started working out. Thank you to the Academy. Wow, thank you. I'm so excited that my first honor as an actor is in the home country, Canada. Wow. And to be handed it by one of my favorite people in the world, Hamza Haq. Thank you to my parents. Thank you to my phenomenal acting coach, Michelle Lonsdale Smith, without whom this performance would not have been what it was. And to my director, Fazia Mirza, for casting an Indian woman in a Pakistani part. And it's a big deal. Pushing for unity between two countries that were once one. Colonization pushed us to a place of division, genocide, and now two communities who once loved each other live in absolute vitriol. It's a scary time to be an artist. I am scared. I am scared to speak up. But this honor reminds me that I am an artist, and to be an artist, it is my job to feel and to empathize. And for those of you who are telling us artists not to speak up in fear of losing jobs, in fear of losing careers, in fear of losing reputation, you are telling us not to be artists. And I want to say to you people that I am an artist and I refuse to sacrifice and live in the hatred of humanity. Cease fire now. Free Palestine. Thank you.
Well, that's very moving. Right, and so we can feel that humming in all of us, right, Eddie Nix and everybody listening. To be an artist is to speak up. It's very now, you know, Gemini on behalf of Pisces. Pisces, where it's radical, is everything that mainstream culture has imprisoned, Leonard, or exiled or undervalued, but is of great value, right? And to speak up on behalf of that, you know, may all of us, you know, plight our troth, right, to make our dedications to being that kind of voice, right? And what you remind us all the time, you know, Eddie Nix, again, the power of speaking up and not cringing in the face of blackmail, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. What is that seed these days that sparks that activism, you know? And part of this is this intersection between, let's say, hermeticism and activism, or what Peter Wilson called green hermeticism, you know, infusing the animist ideology into your activism and invoking magic as part of your understanding of why you're doing things, because we live in such a deadened culture, especially when you talk about politics or the social, it becomes just such a horrible sort of gang turf warfare of ideologies that, you know, unless we have that sort of magical spark, I think, wherever it comes from, whether it's your own innate religion or whether it's animism or, you know, the green ideology that sort of sparks that, I think that's where you really see that. That's why Seattle happened. And that's why Seattle never happened again, because they said, okay, hey, we got the playbook. Let's make sure that guy never happens again. And You know, where is that next generation spark? Is it, you know, how does it manifest? And I think that's the question of modern day activism, because traditional activism is kind of a dead end path.
Right. No, that's great. I was hanging out some ways back, maybe a year ago, in Bolinas with many great young activists who were saying, you know, it's always us, the same people, and we're all burnt out. You know, we've been at we were always the people getting, you know, arrested. And my language impulse was to go, no, let's not say burnt out. And then going, no, let's say burnt out. You know, in Hawaiian, it's pow. Pow means completely burned to ashes. Pow. It's burnt out. And then arising from those ashes is exactly what you say, and my primary dedication throughout my entire life and this entire show and humming in all of us too, which is the wedding of animistic, hermetic participation with activism. It's the trickster medicine is the sine qua non, because it renders all of the others effective. You know, and this is where, again, you know, progressives, bless our hearts, you know, have been suffering from magic deficiency, and then turn to indigenous people who are not, you know, again, both are crucial, you know, in you know, accumulated over the years, you know, some very real examples of cooperating with the wind, cooperating with Pele, the volcano goddess, to disrupt things, cooperating with Elegba to open the jail doors, to, you know, all of that. And I like to say, you know, animism, it's not a belief, it's not a whatever, it's just good manners, right? It's like, what's your story and how can we cooperate? And, you know, all the crucial Janine Benyus, all homage to her. Hello. I'd love to talk to you again. the sine qua non is, rather than looting nature, let's borrow her recipes, and then always to approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity. Hello, what's your story? And how did this happen to you? And what did you want to be before you got sketchy? You know, let's cook it back. You know, again, the source of the Jordan River begins in a cave sacred to Pan. Cook it back to land-based animism and kinship that is not nation borders, that is land love, right? So all of these things. But yeah, green hermeticism and Hakim Bey. And, you know, I'm still following your reading list and so grateful for you introducing Hakim Bey and Thomas Merton. We might bring him into. You are wonderfully cultured that way. But for those listeners, you know, where would you like people to start with Hakim Bey, with Peter Langhorne Wilson?
Well, you know, any of his books. I mean, there's 20 or 30 books that are probably still in print, whether it's PM Press or Autonomy Media. You know, they're hard to find out in the wild at bookstores, but if you ask for it enough, booksellers will always, you know, sort of adapt their ways. The internet's just full of stuff. You know, Peter was almost a prophet of the internet in that, you know, Taz, his great book from 1985, I believe it was, where he sort of laid out this whole cyber thing that was about to happen to us, but he was very skeptical. And as it manifested through the 90s, he became more and more skeptical. And he became a Luddite in the end. He never had a cell phone, never had a computer, wow, never drove a car, you know, maintained that kind of ideal. But nevertheless, he became one of the early sort of internet anarchist pioneers, where his stuff was always sort of put out on the internet. So there's endless, the Anarchist Library has a great archive of his stuff. There's a lot of places on the internet, you know, that what comes to mind right now is we're in spring, you know, and around here driving by the Amish greenhouses every day and seeing these folks out in their fields, you know, just mercilessly, tirelessly, like working away. And yet the minute your, you know, car drives by, they straighten up and they hold their shovel and they wait. You know what I mean? And the waving culture, the acknowledgement culture, I think is something we've really lost, especially when you get into the cities where walking by someone is almost an aggressive thing. You know, you're fearful. You're not acknowledging them. You're not looking them in the eye, right? You ever try like walking through New York City and looking everyone in the eye? You'll be arrested or beat up. So, you know, but seeds as this revolutionary activity. I've been saying this for a number of years as I've kind of, you know, mellowed out in my older age, is that, you know, planting seeds, saving seeds is probably the most revolutionary thing we can do right now on for ourselves as a way to, you know, impregnate this sense of beauty and sense of responsibility for this world we live in, you know, this idea that nature is something outside of ourselves. I think was one of the great, like, sort of abstractions that science took when around the time of Bruno and for the next 100 years, where this scientific mentality took over from what could have been a more enlightened alchemical hermetic approach. And I think that's really one of these crucial points we have to examine, is what was lost when science, you know, was king. And alchemy and magic and animism and all these things were sort of left behind and almost shunned. I think we lost the ether, right, in science when you say, well, you know, we can account for about, you know, 8% of reality, but the rest is just dark matter. And you know, well, is it just something we're going to write off that we don't want to understand? Or is it maybe what the ancients have been talking about, you know, for thousands of years? And I think we also lost animism in that whole fight. You know, I mean, Newton was a great alchemist, but he could never talk about it. And his alchemical manuscripts weren't discovered until way after he was dead. You know, and yet we look at him as the basis of scientific rationalism. And yet he was a guy who was still hanging on to it. Same with people like Wilhelm Reich, that, you know, for 50 years he said, hey, my papers cannot be seen by the public. And that's coming up like next year, I think, or maybe it was last year, where Wilhelm Reich's papers have finally been made public. And it's fascinating when you look at collections of great people, like, wow, where's their archives? And then you realize, ooh, there's this box that can't be opened for 30 years. Like, what's in there? And for instance, this author around here, August Derleth, who started Arkham House, and published H.P. Lovecraft for the first time. He's got a whole series of boxes at the Wisconsin Historical Society that can't be opened for another, I think, 7 years. And it probably deals with his love letters to men, you know, which when he died was something that he had to hide. And, you know, in a sense, it's still kind of a hidden part of his biography.
Let's bring H.P. Lovecraft into, you know, again, transcending, well, everybody's liberated backstage. But, you know, that's crucial. And my friend Sylvia often refers to what is dismissed as our junk DNA. And she goes, that's probably our mythological knowledge and guidance. And as we approach the solstice, which is meant to be the wedding of all things that have been falsely estranged. And here on our work table, the false estrangement between intellectual endeavor, you know, and deep mystery. You know, they love each other. It's a false estrangement. And we know that cultures symbolically embedded their science in their myths and fairy tales and symbolic languages like astrology. There's many great examples. You know, the Inanna myth, the Quetzalcoatl myth, is the Venus astronomical cycle. There's many. And so what happened was the unsupervised boys team, you know, the new moon addresses this, you know, the head of a youth changes into that of a mature thinker. May it be so. The immature thinker boys team, I'll say that anyway, just for fun, the science team said, we don't want these myths, these fairy tales, this music, these symbolic languages like astrology, we want just knowledge, right? So it separated knowledge from its mythic guiding cocoon that knowledge be used in dedication to collective well-being, right? And here, this hour, this time, this all around us, we are invited to re-wed, you know, going, we can be intellectual mystics. We can be pragmatic mystics. We can be visionary activists. We can wed all these things because it's a mean trick of the reality police to render good-hearted people ineffective, right? So there. Yes, all of that. And we've handed it to, well, I just want to play this last little quip just because Steve Bannon's going to prison July 1st, knock on wood, 4 months, right? So, but he'll miss the Republican convention, but out in time for the election. But we have just a clip, right? And it's, think of it this way. Here's Gene Wilder playing Steve Bannon, whose Trump plan has gone awry. Here we go. Gene Wilder.
Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in?
And you won't be angry?
I will not be angry.
Abby someone.
Abby who?
Abby Normal.
Abby Normal.
I'm almost sure that was the name.
Are you saying that I put an abnormal brain into a 7.5 foot long, 54 inch wide gorilla?
What?
Is that what you're telling me?
Anyway, that's fun. That's just to honor Steve Bannon, whose Trump plan has gone awry, just for the fun of it. So here we are. So many ways to go. You've brought in so much richness, Eddie Nix. Let me just say about the chart now. What is working for us? Jupiter in Gemini. Big stories in conversational vernacular. May it be so. And excuse me. Jupiter has a quintile to Saturn in Pisces, whose image is, you know, finding fellow travelers along the way. Here we are, pilgrims, or some better word than pilgrims. You know, and it is also, as my friend Sylvia reminds me, Sylvia Hanley, great astrologer ally for life, that the quintile is irresistible eloquence for those who are dedicated on behalf of what they love, and the capacity to open portals between worlds. Well, now, once again, you know, Legba, open the doors for necessary miracles as such a kind of crucial dynamic. And Jupiter trines Pluto, and just to bring in another ancestor, great astrological ally, smart intellectual mystic, Jim Lewis, a great buddy now in the other world, and we call on them too, you know. Jim Lewis said, look at Jupiter-Pluto, incredible for publicity. And I go, maybe, okay. Yeah, okay, that seems true. Why? So from my more kind of mythic realm, Jupiter storytelling, Pluto death, rebirth. Its primary totem is the phoenix. Before the phoenix burst into flame, into flames and is reborn, it sings this hauntingly beautiful song. And all of creation listens to the phoenix's song, Yantan Tethera, the phoenix's song, and is reminded of what's really important. Beauty and kindness and culture and reciprocal blessing and mutual aid, and you know, and we just add everything, and then the phoenix bursts into flames. And I go, all right, we could say the phoenix got a lot of publicity. All of creation listened to her song, and it says, you know, to all of us in our magic backpack, you know, to say, to wonder for each one of us, what is our phoenix's song? If we have the capacity personally, collectively, to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance, you know, and what's really important, you know, what would that be? And it's like, well, put that question in your pipe and smoke it, you know. The wondering, even wondering what our dedication is, again, strengthens the outward unfolding of the path. So yeah, we're working for that. So what else? The reason I also was so enthused that you were so playfully available among my very favorite anarcho-pirates, Eddie Nix, is that our rising today is 28 Virgo, whose image is, in a cave overhung with twisted roots, a seeker pores over the glowing pages of an illuminated alchemical manuscript. And we go, oh, that's you, Eddie Nix. That's a part of all of us. That's Giordano Bruno. That's Peter Langsborn Wilson. That's, you know, and that's, you know, Leonard Peltier. That's everybody. But isn't that a great image?
It is. It is. And it reminds me of, like, one of my favorite plants, you know, to use a plant metaphor, is the onion. And, you know, it's sacred because it has so many layers. And it's esoteric because it has so many layers. And that's what the Yazidis used to believe, or do believe. You know, and really, when it comes down to it, we're all looking for freedom, right? But our freedom has to be linked to everyone else's freedom, or else it's just more slavery, right? If you're free and everyone else isn't, how fun is that? So as we weave our intentions into this, you know, sacred quilt that we're all knitting furiously, trying to imagine Leonard walking free and the bombing to stop and everything, I think we have to remember this idea of bewilderness, you know? Let's be amazed, and let's increase the amazement, right? Let's be bewildered, but let it be that idea of wilderness too, you know, not wild, but part of us. And how do we reintegrate with that and use that in our collective imaginings? And, you know, I would just hope that everyone listening can find a way to somehow tweak the cultural algorithm just a little. You know, you might not be able to rewrite cooperation versus competition, but I think we can each code a little bit into our daily lives that will affect the global cultural algorithm that's operating on us. And hopefully one day we can get rid of it. But, you know, certainly radio shows like yours are the most important kind of practical magic we can do. I think active listening, active contemplation, and active dreaming are the things that will, you know, help in the end and get us through to where we need to be, you know, which I think is with each other.
Yeah. Well, we're on our way out. Thank you so much, Eddie Nix. That's really super great. We have in our magic backpack the two Mercuries, the Virgo rising Mercury of Hermeticism and the Gemini, whatever. So may it be that all of us be able to give vernacular expression to complex, beautiful things. That's really great. And again, seeing Leonard Peltier, and also our ally Jarvis Masters. You know, seeing everybody, you know, released from prison into the world of storytelling, welcoming world of storytelling. Thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. Thank you so much. Thanks again, Eddie Nix. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week, and Patreon Visionary Activist Show is where you can get the backstage notes. Woof. Oh, yeah,